This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Embracing Change podcast. We have a fantastic treat for you today. We have a special guest from Dayton, Ohio, Dr. Rhonda Smith, who's here to share a little bit about what she is doing up in Dayton, her vision and ideas and about her life. We're very excited to have her. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, very gladly. So, Dr. Rhonda, would you just share a little bit about who you are, what you do right now, a little bit about what's going on up in Dayton, Ohio?
Sure. So what I do now is behavior health. I have a practice in Dayton, Ohio, where I teach women and men how to love themselves. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest thing I do is I do substance abuse. So what I do with that is when people come into my office, a lot of times they're in co-related relationships. Some of them are addicted to toxic love, some of them are addicted to drugs, and so they're trying to figure out how to get out of this, mm-hmm. this situation. So if I write them Suboxone, which blocks the thinking of that drug, they can be okay with that. But a lot of times the relationship is really hard because it's addiction.
Yeah.
So I teach them how to go within and change their core, change their mind, it's their mindset. So I have a curriculum called Self-Love Breakthrough to a New You. And with that curriculum, it's 12 chapters. And we go through each one of those chapters. And each chapter talks about self-awareness, self-love, different things that got them in the situation in the first place. Right now, I'm doing that curriculum at DCI with the women, where I used to work. And I loved working there.
Yeah, we're going to have to hear more about that.
Yeah, it's a good facility. Yeah. Lakrita's spoken there a couple of times. Good
I do.
Place. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So I'm in there now. And when I left there years ago, about 8 years ago, I told them I would be back. Mm-hmm. They didn't believe me because they felt like everybody abandons them.
Yeah.
So when I come back in, they're like, are you coming to work here? And I'm like,
yeah,
no.
Work with you.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, you know, when I take my book to them and then I come back a week later and they're like teaching and then out in the yard, look at this book. But that's a lot of what I do now. I do a lot of talks. I do a lot of workshops. I did a workshop about a week ago at Living Word Church in Vandalia, Ohio, and 380 women registered.
Nice.
Women are hurting and they want to know why they're in these relationships and what's going on.
This conference that you had put on, was it mainly focused, what was the main focus of the?
So the main focus was trauma healing.
Trauma healing,
uh-huh.
Okay.
It was a workshop on trauma and healing. And once we put it out there on Facebook and just marketed, it was like 100 and something shares because a lot of women are hurting, but they're secret about it because it's shameful, it's painful, and they don't want to talk about it. But they were there trying to see, hey, what is this? So they were very vulnerable there. They were asking questions, you know, and raising their hand because they felt like they were in a safe space. So it was very, very, very awesome. We were surprised it was going to be that many people.
And do you, in your practice, well, not so much in your practice, but in your ministry, in your outreach that you do, it is built on Christ, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Do you see a lot of that play out with, as you share your faith and as you share, like, just the common sense of recovery?
Yes. Yes,
I do. Married together. Yeah.
Yes. And a lot of times when you share, when you're vulnerable enough to share your story, which I talk about when I do my workshop, a lot of them are like, you know, because people think that, you know, this thing has a face and
come
it doesn't.
Come on.
Right.
It can
Dr.
happen
Rhonda.
To anyone, you know. And so when I tell my story, they're like, oh, tell me more. You know, when I worked in the prison and I started doing workshops there, they would come see me and act like they were sick, but they were really coming in saying, tell me again about the first stage. You know, tell me about the second stage. Because they wanted to know. They were really hungry for the truth.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, once you seek the knowledge and understand that, you can't get through this without God.
Amen.
It just won't happen.
Amen.
That's 100% of it first.
You know, when I heard you speak, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay.
But when I heard you speak at reentry last year, the one piece that really was intriguing to me is the relationship piece. Mm-hmm. The piece that you talked about, you know, as far as how people are entangled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and relationships we were created for relationships,
absolutely,
right?
We were. Mm-hmm.
And so everything we do, we begin to start relating, and then we begin to ship it. I mean, you know, we relate to it, then it becomes the relationship, mm-hmm. which the ship to me is when you connect yourself to it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so now it has movement. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? First, you may have just, like, when I think about, I remember when I first Freebase, back in the days, it was Freebase. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Now it's crack cocaine, but you know, right. same difference, smoking cocaine. But I remember how my friends and I used to, like, it was social, right? And I remember people saying, if you're not careful, you will end up running after it. Mm-hmm. And I just remember all of us at that moment made a decision that that was not going to be us.
Right.
And by the grace of God, it wasn't in that area, right? Mm-hmm. But what I realized that day, and as years pass and now in my own process, is that when you hit that first hit, that's in anything, come on, any mm-hmm. relationship.
That's right.
I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. You when you bust, it's almost like being a virgin. Mm-hmm. When you bust that open, mm-hmm. everything else is an illusion.
That's right.
You're never
That's
gonna right. get that same feeling again.
But you're trying.
But you're trying. That's you're running after.
That's right.
That illusion.
That's right.
That feeling.
That's right.
That space mm-hmm. that has already been busted open. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I got that, even back then. You know what I mean? And though my relation and my relationship to other stuff, I realized it was when I realized that I had to go back to that moment when I got that revelation mm-hmm. that my going to prison, all the times I went and everything I was doing was I was running after
right
that rush.
That's right.
I was
That's
running right. after that feeling.
That's right.
You know, that I would never really get back because mm-hmm. you only get it once. In
That's
the
right.
endorphin minutes, you only get it once.
That's right. Absolutely.
So do you see that in
Absolutely.
The people you serve?
Whether, Absolutely.
Whatever the addiction is?
Both addictions. Because when you see someone that has an addiction to a substance, mm-hmm. that first hit, they're looking for that. When you see somebody in a relationship, that first stage, which is the love bombing stage, mm-hmm. because you... they know how to bring it on.
Yeah. Come on.
I
man.
Love you. You're beautiful. You're the best thing I've seen. And when you need that validation, you're liking that. Come it's on. Like, whoo. But he yeah. already know he's setting you up, or she, because it mm-hmm. could be a man or a mm-hmm. woman. So they're setting you up. That's the first stage. That's that crack cane stage, I call it.
Crack cane.
That's a good crack cocaine stage.
That's a good one, though.
Yeah. And so I tell them, you're now addicted. And they know that. And yeah. then in the second stage, all of a sudden, it's called devaluation. They're mm-hmm. not talking to you anymore. They're missing an action. And you want that hit again. What do I got to do to get that hit? Do I got to lose weight? Do I got to do something to my hair? What do I got to do? Because you're looking for that illusion. Mm-hmm. And then the third stage, when they leave you, oh, my God. Now you either got to go get another man or woman to cover that addiction, or you're going to get on drugs to cover the pain. Yes. So I see it right in there. And once they understand, once I start teaching them, look, brokenness attracts brokenness.
Come on.
Let's become whole. Once you become whole and know who you are, and you break that cycle, which is hard to do.
Come on.
It's not easy.
Ooh-wee. You better say it, girl.
But once they get free, ain't nothing like being free.
Free. Ooh-wee. Ain't nothing like being free. I'm telling you.
And I have clients now that's like, oh, my God, I didn't think I was going to make it. But I tell them, look, you it's going to be so hard. You're going to be crawling on the floor sometimes. You're going to be crying.
You're going to be an infant.
Absolutely.
Level.
It's like learning to walk and talk all over again, because all you know is that feel, because so many people have been in those relationships over and over and over that they don't want to hear it. I had one of my clients say, look, I don't want to do the work. It's too hard. I'm just going to stay here. And it's sad. Mm-hmm. But it happens. Yeah. I had an 80-year-old woman call me and say, can you tell me what has happened to me? Why did I stay in these relationships all these mm-hmm. years? My family doesn't know. My kids don't know. Now he's sick in the bed, and I got to take care of him, and I'm 86 years old.
Come on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In other words, I am now looking at my choice.
That's right.
Come on. I am faced with my decision.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm wondering, how did I get here?
How did I get here?
You know,
how did I get here?
How did I get here? And it's like, now you're responsible for that choice mm-hmm. in a
Absolutely.
Way that you don't even want to be.
Absolutely. And all these years, she did it.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, it's a generational thing.
Come on.
You know, back in the day, Papa was a Rolling Stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. They thought that was a song and that was cute, but that was happening.
that was real.
Right? It was happening, you know? And so our older generation didn't tell. They were embarrassed. Some of them didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a baby up the street. Well, he's your husband. He come home to you every night, because that they didn't understand self-esteem. They didn't understand self-worth. That, you know, that's not good and that's not right. But that's what they had learned.
It reminds me of the movie Fences.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Come on, Fences is mm-hmm. a visual with Denzel Washington mm-hmm. and Viola. I'm telling you, when mm-hmm. you see that yep. movie mm-hmm. or that play, however you want it, you know, because mm-hmm. it was a play, then it was a movie.
Yeah.
That is the epitome
yeah.
of what it looks like.
Absolutely.
Especially for mm-hmm. for generational, and this is what we do.
Absolutely.
And at the end, how she had to take care of that child. Come on. And it's yep. like...
Absolutely.
You know.
Falling from Grace is another one with Tyler Perry. Did you
yeah.
see that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was, you know, the same thing. Her husband did that same thing to mm-hmm. her. She hadn't healed, because you got to heal with your inner child.
Come on.
If that doesn't yes. happen, then you're going to repeat that cycle. So we call that codependency anorexia.
Yeah.
You know,
oh.
and the guy came
Talk
to
about
her
that.
And, you know, it's like, okay, I'm done. I'm angry and I'm done. Yeah. I haven't healed, but I'm done. So you're done, but something's going to come back and open that wound.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah, I love when you say codependency, anorexia.
Anorexia. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because something's got to feed it. You know?
Absolutely.
And then when you look in the mirror at yourself, you see yourself so different than what you really are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it's almost like a false reality.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's sad, but it happens to a lot of people. But a lot of people don't even understand what this is, you know. Mm-hmm. So when you start teaching them, it's like, oh, my God. I even when I learned about it, I was like, what? I mean, it was really shocking,
yeah.
you know, to know this is what I was going through and this is why. But you have to really want to do the work and depend on God to follow, to take you through. And I realized, okay, you had me dating all these different relationships so I can talk about
come
it and
on.
Teach.
I tell people.
Because what I was in
on.
It, I didn't know. You know.
I tell people all the time, it's our pain that becomes our purpose,
absolutely.
That becomes our passion.
Absolutely.
And that becomes our path.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's then to help other people mm-hmm. realize that, like I always say, John the Baptist, I've already went before you,
mm-hmm.
paved the way. And you can walk in it.
That's right.
But you have to be willing, as you said, to do the work. And so I was talking with some, I mentor someone in Nashville, and we were talking today. And one of the things that she said was so profound to me, she's writing a book. She had lost her son, and she's writing a book on grief. And one of the things she said was that, you know, we've always been told as people, you know, especially, and I'm just going to say as African-American people, you know what I mean? That, you know, we got to work harder and we got to work and we got to do this and we got to do that. And I'm not saying other nationalities or other, you know, cultures don't, have not been told that, but she was specifically talking about her. And she was saying when her son passed away, she knew, she understood in that moment that her son, because he was 21, and she had been taking care of him. He had some disabilities. But the one thing that he had gotten so much better, and our life was good. So when he passed away, she had to realize that it was like God came and got him when everything was whole,
mm-hmm.
right? And so mm-hmm. she had already expected death throughout his life,
mm-hmm.
but it never came. And then they went to sleep. They had just had this big celebration. It was on the 4th of July. They, you know, went places, and then they went to sleep. And when they woke up and she went into his room, he was gone.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And like she said, it flattened her to the ground.
Yeah.
But what she has had to realize over this last year and almost 2 years in July of this year is how to get back up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
How to get back up in a way that is more healthier, and mm-hmm. then letting go of some of the expectations mm-hmm. that she had.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, she was in a relationship that was not necessarily as healthy
mm-hmm.
in her own mind
mm-hmm.
that she should have been in.
Right.
So
right.
now God is healing her through her own pain, through mm-hmm. this book, through this, you know, and looking at, and she's real intelligent, got her master all those degrees. And like she said, I love when she said, to she broke down to me about understanding. She said, if you look up understanding, she looks, it's a whole big thing about, she does the etymology of the word.
Etymology
of the words. Yep. She's got a degree in communication. So she was looking under the word understanding. And she said, when you look at understanding, she said, you go back, and she said, it used to be like, I guess people in the army or whatever, and they would say, this is your post. And that you stood under this post, mm-hmm. and you did not move from it. Mm. And whatever came in your life, you know, like when the enemy come, it wasn't just that you stood under here, this pole. It was like a flagpole and you stood there. It wasn't that you stood under that. You had to be accommodated by wisdom, because if the enemy came at you, mm-hmm. come on, she said you had to learn the wisdom. Even though you understood your assignment, mm-hmm. you had to then learn the wisdom when the enemy and life came at you, mm-hmm. how to navigate it. Mm-hmm.
Because that is even, so important.
Come on. She said, when she broke mm-hmm. that down to me today, she said, and that is what I've been doing now, is learning, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, the wisdom. Because I stood under that pole of taking care of my son. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For his 21 years. Mm. And I did well with that assignment. Mm-hmm. Now I'm learning the wisdom so I can then give it to other people. Mm-hmm. Come on.
That's what it's about.
She said, because without it, all I did was stood under mm-hmm. my yeah. assignment. Mm-hmm. But I got nothing if I don't get the wisdom.
That's right. That's right.
I thought that was just
that's
so
deep. Because your misery is your ministry. Come on. It truly is.
I thought that was Amen. So profound it is. When she yeah. said it to me. I've almost shouted. I'm like,
that is deep. I
ain't
like that.
Deep. And mm-hmm. she's really deep into language and communication and what she does. And it's just, oh my God. And I was like, and I even said to her, I was like, why am I mentoring you now? And she's like, because you have strength and you went before me. Mm-hmm. And you're like an aunt to me. And she said, you have what I know I need in this season. Mm-hmm. I was like, girl, evidently you have what I need in this season.
We all need each other. Right?
Come on.
That's what it is. We all need each other. We yeah. really, really do.
And that's right. what I saw in that moment. I was mm-hmm. like, oh my God. She was like, I said, I'm going to look. She said, no, good. She said, I'm going to send you the story of this whole thing of, you know, the understanding. And I was like, okay, girl, I can't mm-hmm. wait to see it.
I like know? That. I like yeah. that. And she is definitely going to need, somebody's going to need her, mm-hmm. you know, because we don't know what's going to happen down the road.
Come on.
We do. We need each other. And so God will prepare us for others.
Yeah. So what else is, tell us more about you as a person. Just you, I know you worked, but I want to hear how we got, where, how you got where you are, how you got in that chair.
Well, I really don't know how I got in this chair, because it's nothing I went to school for. It's nothing I wanted to do. But what I realize now, looking back, is that God has always had me in this position. He would show me visions of me talking to women, like at that last week, and I would close my eyes because I didn't like speaking in front of people. Mm. So when he was showing me that, I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. But when I got to the prison, because I had my own practice at Wilberforce University, and when I got to the prison, I went there for the summer just to have a summer job, because I hadn't really done anything like that before besides having my own practice. And when I got there and started seeing all these women walking in handcuffed, and I would sit in the office and I'd be like, what? I was just shocked, you know? So when I was sitting there getting ready to leave back out that summer, to leave, he closed the door to Wilberforce. Mm. Now, I was not expecting that. I was like, what? What do you mean? So, and they had asked me to stay, was going to give me the top dollar. And I was like, well, I really can't. Well, God says, zoop. When he closes the door,
it's closed.
He'll do it.
Yep.
And I didn't understand it at first. And then I was going through a divorce. Okay. Everything was going on at the same time. I was going through a divorce, which took me 13 years, almost 14 to get out.
Wow.
It was a horrible divorce. But during that time, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, what am I doing here? What do you want me to do here, God? And then what I realized is that this guy that I trained under named Ross Rosenberg, he was from Chicago. He's a psychotherapist, renowned. He was really good. And as he was teaching me these things, I went to him and I said, I want you to teach me what I need to teach these women that's coming into the prison. I don't want another degree. I just want somebody to mentor me so I can help them. What I didn't understand is he was helping me first, which I didn't even know, you know? So I'm sitting there like, wow. And he said, how much of this is for you and how much is it for your clients? Because I don't call them inmates. One of my clients said, don't call me an inmate. I don't like that name. They're my clients, my sisters. So I said, I don't know. I guess it was a lot more than I thought. But when I started going through my dark season, I would call around to people and say, you know, to therapists and say, this is what I'm going through. What do I need to do? And the first thing they would say is, how much money you got? Because it's $1,000 for 12 months. And I would say, what? Not are you suicidal? Are you in a lot of pain? Not are you okay? And I would sit there with tears rolling down my eyes like, what is this? But when I called Ross one day because I was reading about him, he had a book called Why We Love People Who Hurt Us. And the Lord told me to call him, and I was like, call Ross? Ross, he's not going to answer me. I, to this day, I don't know how I got his number, but I called, left a message. He called me back, and I started crying. I said, oh, my God, you called me back. He said, well, you know, I was sitting in my office, and all of a sudden, the Lord told me to start a mentorship program. I mean, I've never mentored anyone. And so I knew it was all God's appointment. He started mentoring me, and then God told me to leave the prison. I thought, where am I going? I don't have a job. He said, do you trust me? And I did trust him. And when I left, I started doing this kind of work. And I was doing it. Now I realized I had to heal first because I was still broken. I didn't even realize it until I started mentoring with him. So I realized that God put me in this position to go global and tell people about it because people are ashamed to talk about it. You know, a lot of my coworkers are like, I ain't talking about it. I'm just going to stay in this relationship because it's comfortable to be uncomfortable when you're so used to being uncomfortable.
It's your way of life.
Absolutely.
And it's all you know.
When it's time to move from that, it's like, oh, let me go back, you know, because I did that a lot of times. I was like, oh, I don't like the way this feels. Let me call. And God would say, put the phone down, you know. So I had to really pray my way out of it. And so I understand how hard it is. So I believe that I was born for this now. Also, he said, I want you to speak. So I went and started taking these. What's those speakers, classes?
Toastmasters.
Twisted. And God said, I didn't tell you to do that. Told you to speak. And when I started speaking and listening to myself, it was God. It was his voice. It was his calmness. It was his compassion. It was his everything. So I realize now this is what I was born for, not to be with my clients doing PAPs, which I loved all that, but I want people to know that this thing out here is real. Narcissistic abuse syndrome is real. It started June 1st, 2016, right when I was starting to write. Okay. I didn't even know nothing about it. And that happened, and then I start talking about it. So it's birthed. Every year we do something really big for it because we want people to be aware. We want people to learn what this thing is. And that's why I was telling you about the thing we're doing on June 7th in Dayton, Ohio, at the Presidential Banquet Center. We're going to have
Lucreta Bowman.
She's going to be speaking for
special
us.
Special guest.
Yes.
Lucreta Bowman. I'm excited.
I am too. And so I realized that this is my passion, this is my ministry, and this is where God wants me to be. And right now I'm doing a train the trainer because I have a video that I showed 2 years ago at this thing I did, and I was saying, God's going to bring me people, and I didn't have a clue where it was coming from or what it was going to be, but that's happening. Now I have a trainer. Because we got to train people to teach this. We need it in the prisons. We need it in the schools.
Dr. Rhonda, I tell people, if you can get them in the crib,
absolutely,
you will keep them from the cage.
I love that. That is so true.
Come on.
It's so true.
If you can get them in the crib, meaning at the infant elementary, kindergarten, preschool, working through every grade.
Absolutely.
And so they would detour from the cage then they would go to college.
At least they would know, because who don't want love? We all want love,
Come on.
Well, we got to teach toxic love voices, you know, versus godly love. What are both?
And to deprogram somebody is hard work.
Yes, it is.
Oh my.
Yes, it is.
Do you?
Yes, it is. It's a lot of work.
I'm saying because I'll be 65 this year, God willing.
Wow, you look good too.
Thank you. But my point is that I have been through the process of being deprogrammed and being transformed by the renewing of my mind for 33 years. Mm-hmm. See, because like you said, when I got out of prison at 32, I was a 5-year-old little girl emotionally,
That's right.
Psychologically, and mentally, physically, and chronologically, I was 32.
Right, right.
But not everything else, not socially.
That's right.
Not financially, not educational. So I had to go, and my counselor did the same thing, took me back to that child, healing the child within.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And working me back. And so since then, God has been bringing me to these levels. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I tell people, even though I'm 65, I feel like I'm about 40 because developmentally, right? Mm-hmm. I am right where a 40-year-old would be.
Right, right.
You know, and learning new things and seeing it and understanding freedom is possible.
Absolutely. And so then you have, but see, and that's awesome because you have people coming out of prison. And I have watched some of the clients come out and they're back in those situations. Why? Because they don't have anybody to deprogram. They don't have anybody to help them. They don't have any housing. It's like, where am I going to go? So they go back to those same situations. In 2000, Jamie G, she's over Dayton's reentry. We did something called Restorative Voices online, you know, so they could see it's because of COVID. So they could see us on Zoom. And one of the ladies recognized me being in the prison and she wrote me a 5-page letter and I cried. And she said to me, you gave a class, and in that class, you talked about narcissists. She says, and I realized that's who I was with. She says, I've been in therapy all my life, but they never told me that. I'm getting out in 5 minutes, and I'm afraid. I need to know if I can come to your class. And so I met her at reentry. She got in my class. She spoke to me. She spoke for my first Divine Prophet meeting gala.
Okay.
And she's free. She's done the work. But she told me, I would have went back to him. She said, I was sitting in my cell craving for this man who did me so wrong. What's wrong with me? She didn't have a clue. So we got to get to them and let them understand that this is what's happening. And then when they get out, they still need that, like you're doing here, they still need that ongoing foundation. You know, let's show us how to love them, because love is the foundation. When they learn to love themselves, they're not going to shoot drugs in them.
Come on.
They're not going to let people cheat on them. They're not going to do all that once they love themselves and understand how important they are.
And that's the neat thing about even scripture. If we really do it in the order that the Lord says, he says, love the Lord thy God with all their heart, all their strength, and all your might. And love yourself as you love your neighbor.
That's right.
We try to love the Lord and love others and forget about ourselves.
Absolutely.
And that's why we're so dysfunctional.
That's right. People pleasers.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
You know, absolutely. When you were talking about defining narcissism for that client, it just reminded me of what someone had said to me last night when they were talking about how they were going through their healing, that once they understood, once the thing that they were... they called it, their knees were running into a table. They were constantly hitting their shins on a table. And they said, once they understood that was a table, like for them, it was an orphan spirit. But once they understood it was a table, they were like, it had a name. So I understood what to call it. Therefore, I then started positioning myself on how to fight it. And I was oh, that's really good. Like once you name something. So sounds like for your client, that was one of those big epiphany moments.
Absolutely.
Like, here's a name.
Because she had never heard of it.
Yeah.
She just knew those were the symptoms and that's what she was going through. And then she was sitting there craving this person who beat her, who did her wrong, who left her.
Yeah.
She wanted him. She's like, what is wrong with me? Yeah. So she knew it was something. And so when she saw me on there, she was like, I knew I was going to find you. I didn't know where you went. I just knew you were gone. And so we're in contact now. She's working. She's doing good. Yeah, I'm so
really
happy
sweet.
For her.
Isn't it cool when you get to see the fruit of your labor?
Yes.
Like years later, like Lakrita's had that over and over and over again. So she's had this beautiful like insight into that. So I'm guessing the same for you, especially for this one specific client. Mm-hmm. I mean, where you put in the work and you put in the prayers and you like built into her, and now she is thriving mm-hmm. and living her best life. And
yes,
that's awesome.
It is. Yeah. It is.
So what mm-hmm. are some of your dreams, though, your next dream? I know you talk. Let's talk about your books, first of all.
Okay.
Tell us about your books and your curriculum.
Okay. So when I first started writing, I wrote a book, From Poverty to Prosperity, and that is a book talking about me as a teenage mother, mm-hmm. Living in the projects, how God raised me up to do all the things I was doing. But like I said, even though you do everything educational-wise, if you don't understand your core, then you get caught up with love things that aren't good.
Yeah.
So I started writing, and my first book I wrote was Stop the Storm Now, Rise and Walk in Your okay. Divine Purpose. And while I was writing that book, God told me all the different things to put in it. Because first of all, I didn't know how to write. I'm thinking, write? I can't type. Yeah. So I was writing pages.
Everything in longhand.
Yes.
Wow, which takes forever.
All day long. And then my daughter, who could type, would put it into the typing and edit it and all that. After that, I wrote Recognizing the Love Trap, because people need to recognize that when you get this, I told my grandson, I don't want a heart shaped like a heart. I want a real heart pumping blood mm-hmm. with chains wrapped around it. Because when you get in those relationships, you feel like you can't breathe. You feel like you're dying. Then my workbook, when I wrote that, people were like, well, how do you get out of it? Because mm-hmm. you wrote about it, but how you get out of it. So then I started writing the workbook, and the women in prison were my inspiration, because I always knew that if they could just get the chance to get out, they can transform into who they wanted to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that book talks about how to get there from A to Z. It's 12 chapters. You mm-hmm. know, how did you get here? And how your ancestors really want you to not be like they were. Because a lot of our ancestors are in their graves dead. Like that 80-something-year-old mm-hmm. woman, she called me back the next day and said, I'm too old, forget it. And I cried.
Aww.
I said, no, you're not. She said, yeah, I'm too old. I waited too long.
That breaks my heart that she just kind of gave up.
She did. Because she felt like, I'm here now, it's too late. So that's why I tell everybody at the end of my sessions, you're never too late to bloom and blossom into who you were meant to be. Never.
Amen.
As long as you got breath in your body.
As long as you got breath in your body.
But
this lady had been beaten down for so long that she just felt like, but she said, don't stop what you're doing, please. Never stop. But I don't want it. Mm. So what I want to do in the future is continue to teach this curriculum. I want it to go global because I want it in the prisons. I want it in the schools. I also want to get housing, because when I was in the prison, a lot of the women had nowhere to go. So they went back to their abusers. So now we're working on housing, trying to get housing. I'm certified with Ohio Mental Health Addiction, OMAS. So we're trying to get funds and money to build these houses and get the zoning and get things in it so that we can do sort of like what you guys are doing here. I love it. I love it, you know, because they need somewhere to stay. And if you give them somewhere nice and comfortable, they become comfortable and they feel like, I am somebody. I am important. I am worth this. And you do believe in me.
Yeah.
And when they know you believe in them, they start to believe in themselves.
Yeah. One of the things that I learned earlier when my husband and I don't know if you know this, but my husband and I started this ministry mm-hmm. and we started it in our own home.
Wow.
Like it still amazes me when I look back. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how we survived it, but God, exactly.
Exactly.
But we actually bought a home, and then we fixed it all up. I had the vision. The Lord had given me the vision. He gave us the home. And I remember thinking, this was where we were living. And I remember the Lord saying, and I remember coming, you know, after coming out of prison and working and saving real money and getting it honest, because I went back and forth to prison because I was a booster. Mm-hmm. And then at my last case was a drugs, you know, I was dealing drugs. And so, you know, to me, it was always the hustle, right? I was addicted mm-hmm. to the hustle. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. And then so when I finally got a job and worked at Frisher's and, you know, just worked myself up and then got into this, I was saving my money. And I just remember when we got our home, I remember the Lord said, unless you cannot ask anyone else to sow into what you desire, mm-hmm. if you're not willing to sow into it
right.
yourself,
absolutely,
you must be your first donor.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? Like, I saved all this money and got this house, you know, because like you said, the American dream, this mm-hmm. is what I'm going to do. And, mm-hmm. and I'm pulling myself up from the bootstraps. And what do you mean by that? And he's like, you don't need another house to start this ministry. You have been given the house, and now you can start it here. And I was like, give up like my space, like what, you know? And I remember as my husband, and then my husband, who, you know, I love, dear, we'll be married 32 years this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was like, how am I going to talk him into it? Like, you know, like, what is that going to look like? And I just remember sharing it with him. And the thing he'll say even today, he always looks at me and say, if God said do it, I believe God and I believe you.
That's awesome.
And so, and he even said, I may fight you sometime about it. I may not agree with you about it sometime. We may not always line up. But if God said it, I believe him and we'll do it. And so we did it. And I remember giving up our master bedroom and taking everything. We had an attic in this home. And we moved into the attic.
Wow.
And our friend built us like a little closet for our clothes. And we put a full-size bed up there, and he had a couple little dressers. But we started with five women. We had a two-bedroom home, and we started with those five women.
Wow.
And that, to sit here today where we are today in this beautiful $5.2 million home, it was like the Lord constantly reminds me that you sowed the seed and this is your harvest, that I did not forget what you were willing to give up for the call and the assignment.
Yes.
That your foster mother loved you. She loved me. My mother gave me away, and this woman just took me. And she taught me how to love other people's children. And so he said, these are my children. And I'm going to teach you to love you. And then I'm going to teach you how to love me, how to love you, and then how to love them. And I am telling you, we, you know, from there to this, to this, to what we're doing now, it all was about, because I always wanted to have a space and a place to call home, you know, and belong. And so when my husband and I did that, it was amazing. To see where God full circle in 30 years now has brought us to this space.
That is awesome.
I know, isn't it? And it's like every time I'm like, you knew it then. Like he saw me here when I was doing that then.
That's right. That's
and so when I hear you say that you would like to do that, that's what attracted me to you when I heard you speak. And I'm going to be honest, when I gave you my card, I walked up to you after you spoke and I gave you my card. And I thought in my head, I was like, so many people were around here. I said, I hope she heard me. When I got your call, I knew that we were supposed to do something together. I promise you, I knew it. Like, because people were giving you their cards, all it was a lot of people. And I was like, I said, but I remember saying to you, if that is what I am willing to come alongside.
And I remember. But not even that. I was trying to seek you before then. I heard about the houses you did here through Jamie G.
Yeah.
I was trying to call, find you. And look how God just said.
I know.
He just brought it together.
I know. And that's what you told me when you called me. You said, you ain't going to believe this, but I've been hearing about you.
I sure have.
Way before I met you that day at reentry. I've been trying to connect with you for years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look what he does.
I know. At the right time and perfectly at the right time. Because now, because my daughter-in-law is runs these homes now. And that's the neat thing about it, is that because now I have more freedom. That timing is everything.
Yes, it is.
And I'm now more free to do and be a part of the things and move it forward and then I would have been probably when you was trying to contact
me. Right.
Because I was establishing and building and getting to the space that I am in now. You know, but now it's like I want my desire is to help other women establish their purpose and their dreams.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's simple. I want to help them raise money. I want to help them tell the story.
That is awesome.
You know what I'm saying? That is my desire. It's like, I want to empower other women. Like I said, I've been John the Baptist of 30 years in the wilderness. You look at 30 years ago, Dr. Rhonda, they did not have the resources that they have now.
Right.
When I got out of prison, they did not have these resources.
That's right.
They are oversaturated with resources now. Mm-hmm. And they're still always blocking us mm-hmm. in ways to not really penetrate
Absolutely.
And break the barriers down that
Absolutely.
Need to be broken.
Absolutely. You're right.
They're still doing it. And mm-hmm. it's just like, that's why one of the reasons government funding was never one of my priorities. Mm-hmm. I said I did not want any. Because if the government had the answer, not that they don't have the gateway, but if they had the answer, I would have been well a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So when the Lord gave me that vision, he said, and you will not take government funding.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I have not taken government funding.
That is awesome.
And it's been amazing to watch. So that way I can say whatever I want to.
That's right.
Do what I want to do, mm-hmm. how I want to do it. You know what I mean? I mean, with respect to
right.
the Lord.
Right.
But I'm saying not be restricted.
Right.
And it's not about data. It's about relationship. Mm-hmm. Yes, data matter and impact matters. When I'm going to I call them my funding friends and my friends that will want to see their investment. And I'm able to share those things about our wins and the things we do. But it's so neat to be able to do it without feeling like I got to conjure up some numbers and
that is awesome.
Check off the box. And it's just going to tell the stories and sharing the outcomes and letting them come and see that the Lord is good.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That is awesome. I just love it.
I do.
I love it. That's awesome.
So in wrapping this conversation up, how can people find you?
Yes.
So they can find me. I have a phone number I could give, but I also have a website called selflovedoctor.life. I'm also on Facebook at Divine Core Transformation. That is the Instagram. On Facebook, I'm Dr. Rhonda Smith. And I have a number also that they can call me at, and that's 937-520-7889.
Awesome. Thank you for being on the show. This has been great.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yes. This has been wonderful.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
It has. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And with that, folks, we're going to wrap it up there.
The year was 1924. A missions worker from Dayton, Ohio, realized that Cincinnati was in need of its own mission. A vision was born after working with business leaders in the area, including James N. Gamble of Procter & Gamble fame. Throughout its 100-year history, City Gospel Mission has worked tirelessly in the community to break the cycle of poverty and despair as a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and those needing job services. City Gospel Mission has also stayed true to being Christ-centered as the founders intended when they laid the foundation of sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. We look forward to our next 100 years for changing lives and saving souls. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2025 by Lacreta Bowman.